White Rocket Entertainment.
White Rocket Entertainment, podcast number 296. Welcome to Open Wheel, the White Rocket Formula One and IndyCar podcast, brought to you by White Rocket Entertainment and by people like you via Patreon.com. I'm Van Allen Plexico, and I'm joined as always by my co-host for this program, pulp author and all sorts of racing enthusiast, Alan J. Porter. Welcome aboard again, Alan.
Thanks, Van. It's always great to be back on the show and looking forward to a good conversation. I think we got some fun stuff to talk about.
Yeah, our show has kind of become a monthly catch-up of what's going on in Formula One and in IndyCar. And we've got four really cool races to look at from Formula One with some varying things happening in them. And then we've got the final four races of IndyCar before they wrapped up their season on Sunday, I think, night. And we can talk a little bit about how IndyCar wrapped up for this year. It's hard to believe it's already over. It seems like just yesterday that I was anxiously anticipating the start of the season, and IndyCar is already done.
Yeah, they seem to have a very short season compared to other series. I think that's because they don't want to compete with the NFL.
Yeah,
so
that's true. That's a good point. Yeah, nothing wants to compete with the NFL. Even college moves to Saturday and Thursday and every day except Sunday. They just don't want to, so... Well, let's get right into it. We'll do Formula One in our first half of the show, and then we'll come back and talk about IndyCar in the second half. Now, Formula One season, let me bring up my little cheat sheet here, and it's, of course, it's messed up because I had it all figured out here, and now it's going to mess up. Okay, so the Formula One season, there are still 6 more races to go. That season wraps up at the end of November. But the four races that have happened since we last spoke are the Hungarian Grand Prix, the Belgian Grand Prix, the Italian Grand Prix, and in my old stomping grounds, the Singapore Grand Prix. And that one, by the way, always looks so good on television. They do. I just want to say, I don't know how the other nationalities' sports channels handle the filming, but I think NBC or whoever they're getting their video from, whether it's themselves or they're pulling it from an international pool or whatever, they do a great job every week of giving you such nice vistas of whatever exotic locale they're racing in. I always appreciate that because you don't just get like the track. You see like the local castles and mountains, you know, and in the case of Singapore, the city all lit up at night with the water and everything. It really is nice, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it's a world feed. I'm trying to remember, it's quite a while back, but they went to basically a regular broadcast team that does all the F1 races. Mm-hmm. It used to be back in the old days that it was whatever was the local national TV channel did the race.
Right.
And they would like do follow the leader and their local driver, and that was pretty much it. So it must be 20 more years ago now, but they went over to a central team that basically does all the Formula One races, and all the broadcasters take it from the world feed. I think they can choose what they want to take to and from the world feed, because when you look at some of the online stuff, it's slightly different than some of the stuff that you actually see on NBC. And like if I watch clips of Sky, they take maybe different pieces of it, but the actual race footage, and I think a lot of the color footage comes from the world feed.
They have a lot of helicopters and all kind of stuff going on to make it look really nice.
I will tell you, actually, having been to several Grand Prix, for me, one of the highlights is actually watching the helicopter. A guy that flies those helicopters low, sort of nose down low over the track at the same speed or trying to follow a Formula One car about 100 feet off the ground with his nose pointing down, flying between two banks of trees. They're just amazing pilots, those helicopter pilots who film the Formula One races. I could watch them as much as I could watch the cars, I'll tell you.
And you see them always, they do that one cut, especially in Austria, you notice it, where they'll get to the end of a straightaway and they'll just zoom straight up off the camera. They'll switch from the helicopter view to a ground view, and you'll see the helicopter, and the helicopter just like screams straight up after coming down the straightaway. It's so the first time I saw that, I went, "Whoa, what just happened?" I totally lost my interest in the track and was watching this crazy helicopter zooming straight up in the air. It was so funny. You mentioned something else there that rang a bell, and the sky feed. I love how the NBC sports guys are relatively calm and have composure. And so if something really dramatic happens, they're like, "Oh my goodness, wow, whatever," right? It seems like the Sky announcer, when I see him on YouTube or something, they turn into my Auburn announcer during the Iron Bowl at the slightest provocation. They're like, "Oh, good heavens, the carnage!" Ah! I just love that. They get so exercised about it. It's hilarious.
Yeah, and the fun thing is about the British coverage is you have sort of Sky, which is the satellite TV, which has its own Formula One channel. So they are 24/7 Formula One. They have all sorts of color programs, and they have a massive commentary team. And then you have Channel 4, which is one of the terrestrial channels, which does cover some of the races live, but does like highlight shows and stuff of all. And they have their own teams too. So you've even got these two competing teams from British TV at each Grand Prix as well. And they both got ex-Formula One drivers. They both got commentary folks from like previous team owners and stuff. So they sort of have this little interesting competition as to which can be the most exciting to watch. So there, I think that sort of fuels the passion, as it was.
I suspected that's what you were going to say, is that they compete to see who can be the most exciting and get the viewers. That's really funny. It totally reminds me of my college football announcers that just like lose their minds every time anything happens, you know. So that's hilarious. That's great.
I don't know if you've ever actually go on YouTube and search out for some of the Brazilian TV commentary of Ayrton Senna when he was racing. You want to hear excited? try and find the Brazilian TV commentary of Senna's magic lap at Monaco. Then you'll hear somebody really get excited.
Oh, wow. I can just imagine. I can't imagine, but all right. Well, there we go. So you guys out there listening, you got homework now. Go find the Senna coverage from the Brazilian broadcaster. That should be worth your while. Okay, well, so the first race up was from back in the end of July at the Hungaroring in Budapest. And as always, the Formula One races kind of run together in my mind, and I've dug around a little bit to kind of remind myself exactly what happened. But let me just say up front first, and then we can go into the specifics. Here is how every race lately has seemed to go to me, okay? And now, I know this isn't accurate to every race, but this is how, in my mind, every race has gone lately, okay? Lewis Hamilton gets the pole. Verstappen either blows up or crashes into somebody on the first lap, and Ricciardo finishes third. That's been like every race.
That's a pretty good summary of the last four races.
Yeah, because, I mean, Verstappen consistently has a faster car than Ricciardo, and yet every dang race, Verstappen, if his car doesn't blow itself out of the race, he does something, or somebody does something to him, and we can talk about the last one in Singapore, that he doesn't finish. I'm just like, this was supposed to be my big Max Verstappen season, and it's just been a wasted season to me. I got spoiled by having Nico Rosberg as my guy last year because he was just so consistent, you know. And he didn't have a lot of problems. He didn't crash a lot other than when he crashed into Lewis that one time. It still stands out as a memory of all time. Rosberg was just so steady and so consistent. Verstappen, honestly, is like a... he's like a time bomb out there. What do you make of him, and how much of it is his fault? How much is not?
Well, generally, it's not his fault, except for Hungary. I mean, we're talking about Hungary. Hungary's where he basically ran into his teammate and broke Ricciardo's radiator.
And yet he kept going, right?
And he kept going, and he actually did finish. He finished fifth. Yeah, that's it. But after that, but it's not really been his fault. And we can talk about each of the races afterwards. But it's either been mechanical or he's got caught up in somebody else's accident, apart from Hungary, where, the luck seemed to be the other way around. The two of them banged into each other, and Verstappen kept going, and Ricciardo had to retire. So,
well, can
that,
you...
but that seems to be the odd one out in the in what's been going on this season.
Well, tell
sorry,
me,
I interrupted you.
No. I just want to ask you to flesh that up more. Tell me this: how much of it is just bad luck with Verstappen, but how much of it is that he puts himself in the position of really going for it from the very beginning? That makes him more vulnerable, whereas Ricciardo doesn't like stick his nose in the hornet's nest quite as much early on, and so he's kind of able to hang around and just lurk and be there at the end. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think that comes with maturity. I mean, the saying is, you know, to you win a race on the last lap, not the first.
Yeah.
Ricciardo will hang back and wait for, you know, the race to settle down and then pick off his opportunities. And Max will go for whatever gap is there, which is what makes him exciting and interesting to watch. Plus the fact he seems to have just innate car control, unlike we've seen for a long time. So, he can go do... it's going to sound horrible. I don't think he's had the bad accident, even though he's been banging through numerous times, but I don't think he's had that bad accident yet, or that moment that will actually frighten him to say... I'm taking this beyond its physical limits. He just has ultimate confidence in the car himself and his incredible spatial awareness he seems to have, but few other people around him seem to. I think it's he's still only 19 just. I think he's like another 4 days or something before he turns 20.
Right.
But he's... I think it's just a maturity that will come with the years and the racecraft. And I think once he gets that and he becomes the full package, he's going to be unstoppable if he has a car that doesn't break down.
Oh, I want him in – I want my first choice would be Red Bull to be ultra competitive with Mercedes and Ferrari. If that's not the case, I want him in Bottas's Mercedes simply because Bottas is a really nice guy. But Bottas is mayonnaise on vanilla ice cream.
Yep.
And Verstappen in a Mercedes would be amazing. Of course, Lewis Hamilton would lose his mind and immediately like demand a transfer or something. Hamilton couldn't stand having somebody like that. I think Hamilton just adores having Bottas as his number two guy because Bottas is a number two guy.
Yeah, I mean, that's perfect for you. If you're the champion, that's what you want. You want somebody who's going to provide backup for you and take points off the other guys, which is what Bottas is doing. He's doing what he gets paid for. So
and not get uppity. He doesn't expect like Rosberg. Rosberg expected the challenge for the title. Bottas seems perfectly happy to finish second or third.
Well, you have to remember, and this is probably before you were watching, but Bottas was at Mercedes before Rosberg was at Mercedes before Hamilton.
Hmm.
Rosberg was the Mercedes driver before Hamilton arrived. It was Rosberg and Schumacher when the team started. And then Schumacher retired and they brought in Hamilton. So it was Rosberg's team. He was there longer and probably felt it was his team. And then his old friend from his karting days turns up and takes over the team. There was history there. And Bottas is, just hired in on a year-by-year basis. Obviously, his contract just got renewed for 2018, so it's going to be more of the same next year from those two.
Yeah.
As they go forward. So, from Hamilton's point of view, it makes perfect sense to have a good, solid number two.
Yeah. How did Hamilton end up? I'm glad that I did not know that. How did Hamilton end up with the lead car then over Rosberg if Rosberg was there first?
Because they in theory, they never had a lead car.
We know. Look at the color of the little bar.
Yeah, I know. That's based on probably points from the previous season. So
okay.
Yeah, but in theory, at the start of any season, a Formula One team start with two identical cars, and they get identical equipment during the year. Then it really just becomes a question of strategy.
It
goes forward. So depending on results.
There's no question that the senior driver gets the black bar and the junior driver gets the tennis ball bar. That's just no question about that. It's over and over and over. You see it. And so if Rosberg had hung around this year, would he have had the black bar on his car?
Yep, because he was the world champion.
Oh, that would have been so interesting. Wow. And Lewis Hamilton with a tennis ball colored bar on top of his, that would have been interesting.
Also, until it's only the last few seasons they've actually had personal car numbers too. Rosberg, the world champion, always got the number one. So it would have been Rosberg would have been driving the number one car with the, but he decided to go off and have babies instead. So
yep. All right. Well, so Hungary was interesting. I believe that was where Vettel. That was that the last one Vettel won.
Yep.
And it was when I thought everything was already going to start sliding toward Hamilton anyway. So it was it just something about the way the Hungaroring is laid out that benefited the Ferraris? I can't remember exactly, but it seems like that was case.
Yeah, it does. It's a short track. It's difficult to overtake. It's got lots of little curves. It's a tight track. It's almost as tight as Monaco. So it suits the Ferraris more than it did the McLarens. Sorry, Mercedes. That was a Freudian slip. excuse me. I mean, the interesting thing at Hungary was at the end there where Bottas let Hamilton by for Hamilton to attack Vettel, and Hamilton was, well, if I can't get him, I'll give the position back, and fair enough, on the last lap.
He did.
He slowed down and let Bottas back by him and basically gave away three world championship points.
That was interesting. That was very interesting.
So, yeah, that's going to be interesting as the season. I mean, after Singapore, it doesn't look like that, but you never know. Those 3 points could mean an awful lot by the end of the season. So,
Every little thing. I mean, I look back now, we've talked about this before, I think, that you look back now, and that I believe it was Malaysia. It was either Japan or Malaysia where last year, where Hamilton's engine blew up on like the next to last lap. That was the difference between him winning the world championship and not.
Yep. Yeah. So, if you look back, Vettel's been more points behind than he is now and still won the world championship. So, you never know. Those 3 points that Hamilton gave back was a great sporting move. He did what the team asked him to, but, it'll be interesting to see how that plays out as the season progresses.
I wonder what Bottas would have done if he hadn't, because that was the deal. Like, you get 10 laps to try to pass, and if you can't, you get it back. And Hamilton waited till the very last lap and let him go by him on the very end. And I was just thinking, what if Hamilton had said, no, I don't want to give those points back. I don't want to psychoanalyze Bottas, but I mean, I don't know how upset he could really get. He doesn't seem like a very volatile guy, but
Right. It's really unusual that actually Hamilton, because there's numerous examples of people having that arrangement and not sticking to it throughout the history of Formula One. So it's actually really unusual for somebody to do it. I mean, Hamilton made it very clear because he like slowed down coming out of the last corner on the last lap.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
He couldn't have made it more obvious what he was doing. But
he did everything but put his blinker on.
Yeah.
So. Put his flashers on, the flash emergency lights. There's no way that Hamilton would have let Rosberg go around him there under any circumstances. Oh, my goodness. Vettel, that was the one where I believe Verstappen was coming back. Like, he had had an issue early on, and he was catching back up again, and you think, he's going to catch Hamilton, but he didn't quite.
Right, yeah. And of course, the other big thing there was actually Fernando Alonso not only finished a race, but finished sixth. He finished in the points.
Yeah.
Great.
In fact, that has been the constant thing this year. Well, let's pull my cord out just a second there. That has been the constant thing this year that's been annoying me, is that it seems like one out of every three races this year, there's been some drama with about 10 laps to go where somebody's catching up. And they always say, oh, he's going to catch him with like two laps to go, and they never do. I guess it's a combination of their tires start to wear away too, and the other person speeds up maybe a little bit because they know somebody's catching up with them, and stuff like that. But it seems like every time I get excited that we're going to have a dramatic pass on the last lap, it doesn't happen.
Yeah, well, there's two things. If you get too close, you start getting the air coming off the car in front, which robs the air off your front wing, which means you have to drop back. And if you drop back too far, then you're outside the sort of the 1 second DRS drag reduction system thing that helps you overtake. You do notice that with Hamilton and Vettel, whenever Vettel gets anywhere close to Hamilton, he somehow manages to pull out another couple of tenths of a second and open the gap up to more out of DRS range. Mm-hmm. He's very good at doing that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's not just a question of catching the guy in front. It's catching the guy in front and being in a position at the right point of the track, at the right speed with the right gap to overtake him. So, yeah, it's catching up with somebody is one thing. Getting past them is something. And you, that usually takes 3 or 4 laps to figure out where you're going to actually pass somebody.
Right. Yeah. Let's see. At Belgium. Now, this race at Spa, as they say. I'm trying to look at my cheat sheet here. What was the big deal at Spa? This was another. This was Hamilton coming back and getting it close again, right?
Yeah, I mean Spa is one of the classic circuits. It's a brilliant circuit to. I've been lucky enough to go see a race there many years ago.
Cool. Yeah.
It's a brilliant circuit to go watch. It's got some of the best and most challenging corners in Formula One. It's a real classic through the countryside circuit. It's one of those ones where it can be sort of, they say about a lot of things, but it is one of those ones where it can be sunny on one end of the circuit and raining on the other. but it actually has some amazing uphill and downhill. Eau Rouge is probably the best corner in Formula One. It's a
downhill
into a dip
that.
And they get compressed by about 4 Gs and then they come up over the hill and the car goes light by about, so they sort of get a the extremes have been compressed into the bottom of the car and then the car going light as they come over the top of the hill, which is on a curve.
It's like a roller coaster over and over and over and over.
Over and over, yeah.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, my goodness.
So, but I think the big things that came out of there, for me in qualifying, I don't know if you caught this one, but another Fernando Alonso story, but in qualifying, there's one of the corners there, Stavel, and I think it was that one anyway. He went through it flat without lifting his foot in qualifying at top speed.
Mm-hmm.
And the computer that wasn't in the computer mapping for the engine. The engine mapping said nobody could ever take that flat. and because he did, the computer got lost as to where they were on the circuit and it cut the power. So he lost the third sector of his qualifying lap and he would have qualified much higher.
Gosh.
So, yeah. So he basically outdrove the computer on the car. which was really funny.
Man, he's amazing. But
so he only ended up mid pack. But I think that the main thing that I remember from Belgium is that again the two Force India cars trying to kill each other.
Oh yeah! Oh gosh, the two cars
going up against the pit wall. One of them, or the other banging the other one into the pit wall at close to 200 miles an hour as they're coming into Eau Rouge. Absolutely crazy.
There have been several races, just to kind of catch everybody up. Right in the middle of the season so far, there have been several races where the two Force India pink cars have been trying to kill each other. And every week it's like it's the other one's fault, and they hate each other and keep going back and forth. Now, the last couple of races, it seems like they've kind of settled down or just they haven't been next to each other. But because these cars tend to qualify very similar to each other, all the cars, you tend to get like the Ferraris close together, the Mercedes up at the front, you know. The two Force India cars usually end up somewhere like 5 and 6, 6 and 7, 7 and 8, something like that. So they're right close together at the start, and they kind of get forced together, and they don't really have much regard for each other, it seems like.
I think that's an understatement.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. I mean, I'm just looking at the grid. They qualified 8th and 9th, so they were right next to each other. And I think the first lap, coming off the grid, one of them drove the other one into the wall. Can't remember which way around it was. And then later in the race, I know Ocon was coming up the inside of Perez, and Perez moved him over on him and basically drove him into the wall. Perez ended up the worst of that because Ocon's wing burst Perez's tire, but... Yeah, I mean, Ocon went on Twitter afterwards and basically said, my teammate's trying to kill me. no love lost between those two guys.
No, I mean, didn't we already have some kind of a feud going like that with two other teammates? I can't remember who it was. And then these two kind of picked it up and said, oh, we can do even better than that. I don't remember who the other two were, but it wasn't the Toro Rosso guys, but something. But it just...
I don't know, but these two guys have been going at it since Canada. So
pretty much. Yeah, they really have. By the way, there was a little news item I wanted to run by you because I don't have the latest on it. I don't know if maybe you know something I don't. It was just breaking the other day that Renault is not going to be their engine supplier after this year, and we were trying to figure out who was going to do the Red Bull engines. What do you know about that? Because it has to do with Renault. Well, there's like a whole big thing going on. Can you kind of lay that out for us?
I thought... okay, so McLaren...
Yeah, that's the first domino.
Toro Rosso,
yeah,
the junior Red Bull team, are doing an engine swap.
Right.
So in 2018... McLaren are going to run Renault engines.
Right.
And Toro Rosso are going to run Honda engines.
Yes.
And as part of the deal, the Toro Rosso driver, Carlos Sainz, goes to Renault.
To replace
Julian Palmer.
Right. Poor Julian Palmer. He found out on the internet.
Okay.
Depressing.
He found out on the internet. Really nice. Now, my understanding was that Red Bull is still going to be with Renault next year, but it may be the year after.
Okay.
That they're... And there's talk of, I've seen Porsche mentioned.
Yes.
I've seen Aston Martin mentioned today.
Yep.
So, I don't know. Or it might be somebody in, because I think they're talking about 2020 for the new engine regs that Porsche and Aston Martin are looking at. So that still leaves a year's gap. So I don't know what they're going to, whether, because Renault say basically they're not going to supply anymore customers. So,
Well, that was the question, was that would then, does that mean that Red Bull will have Honda next year, at least for 1 year?
They could end up with Honda next year for 1 year. Yeah.
Yeah. I was saying that on Twitter earlier today, that was a suspicion, and somebody was telling me there's no way that Red Bull's going to have Honda. They're going to have Renault. And I'm like, I don't think Renault's going to give them an engine next year. I don't think.
I think they are for 2018, but it's going to be, because this year it's not actually badged as a Renault. It's okay. Badged as something else.
Oh, Tag Heuer thing.
Tag Heuer, yeah.
Okay.
So,
interesting.
I don't know, but they run Infinity sponsorship, so who knows?
And if Renault gets one of the Toro Rosso drivers, who drives for Renault? I mean, who drives for Toro Rosso?
Good question.
They'd be promoting somebody up, or.
They could be promoting one of the Red Bull Junior drivers.
Well, you're going to lose Julian Palmer. Are you going
to? Yeah, but he may go to. I mean, Renault have said then. I mean, there's Julian Palmer's on the market. We still don't know what's going to happen with Fernando Alonso.
Don't know what's going to happen. Don't know what's going to happen with Massa.
Yeah, he's going to Formula E. I'm pretty sure.
Okay.
There's still Robert Kubica out there who's sort of trying to get back. Who, by the way, I don't know if you know, but Nico Rosberg is now his manager.
So they're going to be
trying to get him a seat.
There's going to be a little turnover next year, then, basically.
So I think there's about four or five guys looking at three seats. As Williams, Toro Rosso, are still open. Yeah.
Wow.
So the interesting thing about Williams is because of the Martini sponsorship, they need one driver that's got to be over 25 who can do promotional stuff for alcohol.
25?
Yeah.
Where is the 25 limit?
It's some of the European advertising regulations, I believe. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, that makes sense.
Yeah. So that could be Alonso or it could be Kubica. But yeah, because Stroll's only, 18, 19? So.
Yeah. Not going to be him.
Yeah. Okay. So they need an older driver to keep the Martini sponsorship.
I hadn't even thought about that. When Lance Stroll finished on the podium that one time, was that in one of the Muslim countries where they had the rose water, or did he actually have champagne out there? I can't remember.
Where was it? That was Azerbaijan, wasn't it? So
he probably just
had sparkling water or something. Yeah.
Yeah, isn't that funny? It was just the luck, the timing of it, because it would have been interesting him out there getting drunk on TV when he's 18. Okay, so that was Belgium. Did we miss anything else about Belgium? I know that the part of the big deal was that Hamilton equaled the record of Michael Schumacher for most poles and then went on to win the race and went on to beat that record, too. He's really good at getting pole positions, isn't he? He's quite remarkable.
He is. Actually, somebody was saying yesterday, I think of all the current active Formula One drivers, he holds every record except for the number of fastest laps. And Kimi Raikkonen holds that.
Yeah,
but everything else, wins, pole positions, points, laps led, Hamilton has all of those of the current active drivers.
Pretty amazing. Yeah. Pretty remarkable. Yeah. Monza in Italy on September 3. This was when I was at Dragon Con, so I didn't get to watch it until a week later. I was catching up on everything all week when I got back from Atlanta. But the Italian Grand Prix, that one, I believe, again, Lewis Hamilton? Was this the one where he took the lead?
Yeah.
I believe he actually, he had cut the lead down to like 3 points before Monza. This is the one where he took
Hamilton pole, Hamilton win.
Yeah. And this was another one where the thing that always stands out to me about Monza is the amazing ceremony at the podium afterward. They had the giant crowd and they shoot the streamers, and there's just something about it that that really is impressive.
Yep. Again, another classic circuit. One of the main races to go to. It's always the weekend of our wedding, around the weekend of our wedding anniversary. So I've been trying to persuade my wife for 30 odd years that we need to go to Italy, Northern Italy, for our wedding anniversary 1 year.
Good man. Yeah. Work that out.
Yeah. You know, do the Lake Country and you know. Oh. And by the way, we'll just go to Monza on Sunday.
Oh, look, dear. I had no idea. There's a race.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
It'll work one of these years, I'm sure. I think Ferrari were completely outclassed on their home track, unfortunately for them. That was another Mercedes 1-2 with Vettel on the podium. But even, Vettel finishing third, you would have thought he'd won from the reaction of the crowd at the podium ceremony.
Oh, that's right. And that's where we discovered Vettel's really gotten good at his Italian. He was like, in the past, we've heard him say, like, grazie Ferrari, grazie. You know, he does the two or three words, but he was like reeling off whole sentences and paragraphs there. I was very impressed with Vettel's Italian command.
He was really playing the crowd. He was doing a great job up there. And even Hamilton was sort of playing up the fact that they were all booing him and stuff. He was sort of playing around with that. And yeah, he I think he was being a good sport. So it was good.
This was the race where the grid penalties totally reshuffled the starting grid, and we got Lance Stroll on the first row.
Correct, with Ocon behind him.
And Ocon, I was like, what? I thought I had to adjust my set, as they say. I was like, wait a minute, because I'd avoided a lot of it. And I turned it on, they're like, and Lance Stroll will be starting second. I'm like, second to the back? Whoa, wait a minute, what is this? That was crazy.
And then the two Red Bulls were at the back. Well, actually, half the grid seemed to go to the back. I mean, it was really... Yeah. I'm actually just looking down who got grid penalties. It's Verstappen, Ricciardo, Van Dorn, Perez, Hülkenberg, Alonso, Sainz, Palmer, and Grosjean all got grid penalties.
Well, I remember the funny... One of the funny things was that one of the drivers started, like, ninth, maybe, and they said he actually got, like, 20 grid place penalties, but everybody else got more, and so he actually ended up a place. He got 20 grid spot penalties, and ended up starting further ahead than he qualified.
Yeah, you're right. There was one of them who ended up one position ahead of where he'd actually qualified, and I can't remember who it was.
Yeah, so. After being penalized, he ended up ahead of where he should have been. That is insane.
Yeah, they've got to do something about this grid penalty thing. It's ridiculous, 25 place grid penalties, 35 pace. I think in Belgium, Van Dorn had like a 65 place grid penalty. It's ridiculous. They got to change that rule somehow.
That's where they make you start up in the stands and run down and jump in your car and take off. Make you start out in the parking lot with the fans. And you got to drive into the arena and then onto the track, and then everybody's already left you behind. That's what they got to start doing. You have to start at the previous track and drive to the new track. kind of crazy. So that was that one wasn't the most exciting race. The real question there was, could the guys that started unnaturally forward hang on, or could the hot dogs kind of at the back work their way forward? And that was the race, now that I think about it. I really enjoyed it because it was fun to see the guys like Verstappen and Ricciardo trying to come forward. And I said, they need to start every race now with the best drivers at the back. So, so that we've talked about that before, I think, because it's more interesting seeing them passing people than it is seeing them just run off and leave,
And Ricciardo did his usual trick. I mean, he started 16th on the grid and got himself all the way up to fourth just by playing race guys. And I think this is the also the race where he did that amazing pass on Kimi Raikkonen, where he looked like he was setting him up, and all of a sudden he just flew by. I mean, he came from such a long way back. Mm-hmm. It looked like to be an impossible move, and he just blew past Kimi Raikkonen. So I think there was some good midfield battles. I think it was Raikkonen, Ocon, and Stroll towards the end were going pretty much wheel to wheel. Right on the last lap, this was the one where the two Williams guys got together. Right towards, like, on the last lap, and Massa was trying to overtake his teammate on the last lap, and and Perez was like watching to see, hoping the two of them would take each other off. Crazy.
Stuff.
No need to do that.
No. I just don't understand these teammates trying to kill each other thing on multiple teams now. And then I want to throw in the last one, and then we can see if there's anything else we're going to talk about it. The Singapore race just the other day, this was the one that was so crazy because the Red Bull cars were the fastest cars all the way through practice, all the way through qualifying. Max was the fastest car right up to the very end, where Vettel just absolutely turned on a unbelievable, leave your paint all over the walls and just get that thing across the finish line in a tenth of a second faster lap. And Vettel basically stole the pole position.
Yeah, I mean, did you see the close-up of his wheels?
His wheel.
After he got back? I mean, there was the green paint from the walls on the side walls of the tires. He was literally hanging it out there. I mean, he was using every last millimeter of the road to get that lap. It was an amazing lap.
Well, he did it. He did it. He got first. And, you know, you said earlier you can't win on the first. You can win on the last, but you can't win on the first. But you can sure lose it on the first, right? The problem for the Ferraris and for Verstappen, I'm afraid, is that they believe they don't want to lose it on the first lap. And so they lose it on the first lap. You know what I mean? In other words, they feel like if they don't get off to the lead at the beginning, they're never going to catch. I honestly think, well, in this case, it wasn't Hamilton. But usually I think that there is a literal fear among the other drivers that if Lewis Hamilton is first coming out of turn one, the race is over. And so
they
do everything they can to make sure. I mean, Rosberg was guilty of that. I love Rosberg, but I will freely admit that Rosberg last year knew that if he let Lewis get by him when he was in front of him, it was over. And so Rosberg would do anything, including taking them both out to keep Lewis from passing him, which he did in Spain, I believe. So what that resulted in was this bizarre situation where Hamilton was starting like sixth, I think, and you had the Red Bulls and the Ferraris up front. And let's walk through the beginning of that race. It was raining. It's a night race, and it was raining, which is pretty crazy, right?
And it's never rained there before, so there's no data on running a wet race at night under the lights.
I just can't believe it's never rained there during that race, because I lived there for several months, and it rained like three times a day every day. But
yep.
Okay, fine.
Yep.
But
they'd never done that. They didn't start under the safety car. They went for a normal start,
which is not good, I don't think.
Yeah,
didn't work out.
But do we want to walk through it? I mean, this is the way I saw it. Let's see if it's the way you saw it.
And they started on intermediate. There was a few rain tires, a few intermediate. I just want to kind of set the stage.
Yeah.
That they weren't even in agreement over what type of tires, because you couldn't tell if it was going to keep raining. It like rained really hard about 10 minutes before the start, but then it kind of died out right as they were about to start. And so people were kind of deciding, well, do we want to go intermediate? Do we want to go the rain tire? You know, it's not going to give you as much speed, but at least you're not going to slide all over the place. So they weren't even in agreement on what kind of tires to use. Now take us through that opening insane, because the first lap is the only thing that matters in this race. Take us through that first insane bit.
Okay, so let's see if I can get this right. So when the lights went out, Vettel and Verstappen made a reasonable start. We're pretty much alongside each other going out. Raikkonen close to the wall on the track left.
Really good start.
Made an insanely good start. And by the time they were sort of lining up for this first corner, Raikkonen was alongside
Verstappen.
And for some unknown reason, Vettel over on the other side, instead of staying on the line for the first corner, and this is the way I saw it, drifted over. Cut to his left and came across to where Verstappen was. who instinctively jinked left, which is where Raikkonen was, and he was probably completely unsighted.
Mm-hmm.
You know, with the spray and everything. Mm-hmm. And suddenly Verstappen found himself basically to be at the meat in a Ferrari sandwich,
yeah,
with nowhere else to go.
That's right.
Raikkonen hit Verstappen, spun around the front of him, speared the side of Vettel's side pod, mm-hmm, ripped the things off the side pod. Vettel kept going.
Mm-hmm.
Verstappen and Raikkonen spun off and collected Alonso.
Well,
up the other side.
Hold on. The way that actually played out was even crazier than that. You're exactly right. But what happened was, after Raikkonen hit Vettel.
Vettel was still going at that point.
Vettel was still going.
But he was still going at that point.
Verstappen was still going too. Verstappen was still going in a straight line. Raikkonen slid sideways all the way down the side of the track and collected Verstappen as Verstappen turned left.
Yep, and then the two of them hit Alonso.
Hit Alonso, right.
Who'd made up 5 seconds, which launched the McLaren into the air.
Yes.
It luckily came down on four wheels, and he kept going. About a third of the way around the lap, all the fluid from Vettel's bust radiator in the side pod got on his rear wheels. Mm. So he did a 180.
He went backwards. He was going backwards down the track.
Took his nose off and then was going backwards down the track with everybody else passing him.
Yeah.
So those three were Raikkonen, Vettel, and Verstappen were out. And then by some miracle, Alonso managed to keep the McLaren going for about six laps, and then complained of lack of power. And when they pulled into the garage again, you could see the half the side pod of that was ripped out, and there was wires and oil lines dangling from it. So how he'd even managed to keep it going for six laps was beyond me. So yeah, the first lap both Ferraris were out, which was the first time in Ferrari's history that they've lost two cars on the first lap.
That was amazing. And I gotta say, that what I was sort of trying to get at, and I may be wrong, but what I was trying to get at was, it may have been one of those situations where it wouldn't have lasted much longer, but it seemed to me like, even though he was caught in the Malachi crunch, as they used to say on Happy Days, he was caught in the middle of that Ferrari smashing as the sandwich, Verstappen still looked like he could keep going and was moving in a straight line and starting to turn left in the corner like he had somehow shrugged it off and was okay. But Raikkonen sliding diagonally down the track went right into the side of him. It was almost like a homing device, like Raikkonen's car was wanting revenge for Verstappen being in his way the first time, and it just tracked him all like a bloodhound, just tracked him down the whole stretch to the turn and caught him right when he turned. If Verstappen had slowed down or not turned as soon, Raikkonen would have passed right in front of him.
It could have done, yeah. It could have been a couple of inches either way. So
it was so weird. I mean, because...
Yeah, it was crazy.
So strange. Yeah. And then after that, I mean, somehow, out of all that, guess who is in first place when the dust settles?
Of course,
Hamilton.
Well, he said he needed a miracle to win, and he got one.
Oh, he absolutely did. Because even with those three gone, you still had other people because he started where was Ricardo? How did Ricardo not? That's the thing to me, is how did Ricardo not end up in first when all that settled? Because he was ahead of Hamilton.
Yeah, I think basically he saw the carnage in front of him and took avoiding action, and somehow Hamilton managed to sneak. I've watched the replay numerous times. I still haven't figured out how Hamilton got to front, but he did.
I don't know. I don't have an idea. I think he used like the Vision in the Avengers. He used intangibility mode to just float right through everybody, you know. So,
yeah.
Oh
yeah.
My goodness. So the rest of the race was fairly dull and predictable. And after that insane start, and we end up with Hamilton winning, which just increased his lead overall over Vettel. And the only real action that's coming now is that Bottas could finish second.
Yep.
If Vettel's not careful.
Yeah, he's not that far behind. So
Bottas is closer to Vettel for second than Vettel is to Hamilton for first now.
Yeah, my mental arithmetic's not that good. I'm just looking at the points table, but I'm not that good at math. That's why I'm a writer.
Exactly. But it's
very close.
So. I don't have that open right now, but I can. But it is. I remember though that Yeah, here it is. Vettel. Oh, I need to scroll. Dang it. Yeah, Vettel has 235. Bottas has 212, whereas Hamilton is 263. So 12, 22, 32. Yeah, just 23 points behind.
Yep.
Yeah, so he's it's closer. He's Bottas is closer to Vettel than Vettel is to Hamilton now.
Hamilton, yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
So he could end up second. So.
And then lurking in fourth place. Yeah, it's me, Danny Ricci. I'm lurking in third and fourth place. Having me a shoey. Yeah,
he got another second in Singapore. I mean, given the Red Bull's pace in qualifying and stuff, I expected him to get closer to Hamilton, but I read this morning that he had a gearbox problem, was having to short shift and change earlier, which was reducing his overall speed, which is why he couldn't catch Hamilton, which is a shame. But
get this, Alan, this will blow your mind. It may not. It blows my mind. Ricardo, in all races that he didn't retire, and he's retired in three, okay, including famously Australia at the beginning. In all races that Ricardo did not retire, he has not finished lower than fifth.
Yep. Yeah, I can believe that. Yep.
Everybody else has got like a seventh, an eighth. Not Ricardo. He just hangs in there.
Mr. Consistent.
He just hangs in there.
And the thing is, it's not like he doesn't overtake or whatever. I mean, he shows aggressive racecraft and does some ballsy move, like we were talking about earlier with the one on Raikkonen where he came from way back. So it's not like he just sort of sits back and waits for things to fall around him. He'll go for, you know, he will go for the moves. There was earlier in the season, I can't remember which race it was now, but where he basically took, you know, three cars on one corner from way back again. So it's not like he's just playing it safe. He's reading the race as well, and he's taking the opportunities.
Yeah,
the luck seems to be on his side. Mr. Steady. If he was in a different car, I think he'd be right up there playing for the championship.
No kidding. I always say, I mean, Verstappen and Ricardo are like the hare and the tortoise, and Ricardo is the tortoise, and he just slows steady. Meanwhile, Max Verstappen, in 14 races, in seven of them, he has finished fifth, third, fifth, fifth, fourth, fifth, tenth. And the 10th was he was fighting all the way up from like 20th, so 10th wasn't bad. The other seven, he retired. Half the races he's done well, and half he's retired.
And it's invariably been mechanical or he's been taken out by somebody else. So.
Yeah, he's actually tied in points now with Sergio Perez, who has finished every race but one. Oh, wow, and Ocon has finished every race in the top 10 but one. Wow. Pretty amazing.
And I think Ocon's finished every Formula One race he's done because he did half a season last season and then this is his first full season. So I think he actually holds that record at the moment of finishing every single Formula One race he's entered.
Yeah. And he's finished all but one of the top 10 this year.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. All right. He's another one to watch for.
So, all right. So let's kind of sum up Formula One here. We'll take a quick little break. That would be, I mean, it looks like Hamilton's championship to lose now, right? I mean, it's going to take something unexpected and remarkable because next we got what, Texas?
No, Malaysia next.
Oh,
week,
that's right. Malaysia and then Malaysia, Japan, and then I was seeing something about the U.S. Grand Prix and I was just assuming they meant it was next. But yeah, you're right. Malaysia and then Japan, and then they come back for the U.S., Mexico, Brazil, and then they go back to Abu Dhabi. We'll wrap it up. So. I mean, unless Malaysia causes Hamilton's car to blow up again, I mean, he's too tough. I just don't see
it. Yeah. It's going to be difficult, but like I say, I mean, Vettel's come back from further than this before when he's won his championship, so we'll see how it goes.
We'll see.
And, you know, it only needs another engine to go in Malaysia. And that could turn the whole thing around.
All right. So any kind of summarizing thoughts or last thoughts about how it's looking beyond what you were just saying? I mean, that may be it. I mean, I'm looking forward to it, but all I want is just for the races to be somewhat competitive and have something interesting happen, preferably not just on the first lap.
Yeah, I think we're still in for some good races. I think there's still going to be a few unpredictable ones. The weather sometimes plays a part in Japan. We know it does in Brazil. Mexico's oh, yes. always interesting, of course. Looking forward to the US Grand Prix. So that should be fun.
You're going to be there again?
Yep. Yeah, right. We'll be there.
Very good. Well, there was a race I was at, which we'll get to in just a second. So let me go ahead and thank our sponsors from Patreon.com. That is how the White Rocket shows stay on the air. We really appreciate it. We actually had several new patrons join up today after the latest AU Wishbone Auburn show, and we really appreciate them. We're still a little ways from our monthly goal, but we're getting closer and closer. And so I want to thank our two premier level sponsors, Nicholas Cottrell and Joseph Fine, and then David Medinas, Mark Squire, Dave Powell, Jared Albrick, Rich Reimer, Michael Kirshner, Bill Matthews, Joey Miller, Matthew Wagstaff, Russell Milling, Dan Thompson, Chris Thrash, Wes Atkinson, J.W. Rice, Phil Amthor of WeHaveDonuts.com. Be sure to check that out. Randall Walker, Richard Stevens, and our one-time anonymous donors, a couple of them. Wardam Wade, and of course, our newest one-time donor, Neil Dyer. So thanks to all you folks for helping our show to stay on the air. We keep expanding and trying to bring you more stuff that you'll enjoy, as well as other things from White Rocket. And to be a part of the show, and for those that are into the part of the Auburn crowd, the Auburn family that listens to our shows, you can be part of our new White Rocket AU Wishbone Power Poll for the SEC, and you get to vote. Everybody that's a patron of our shows gets a ballot and gets to vote in the SEC Power Poll during the season. So just go to patreon.com, patreon.com/Van Allen Plexico. Or you just go to patreon.com and just type in Plexico in the search thing. I will come up immediately. I'm about the only one. So Plexico. I'm developing my new webpage. It'll have links to everything in one handy location. It's just Dragon Con came up and threw all my plans out the window for about a week, and everything's trying to catch up. All right, Alan, let's take a quick look at IndyCar season. It has just ended. We had four races since last we spoke. We had Pocono. We had Gateway right up here 30 minutes from my house in Madison/Granite City, Illinois, Watkins Glen, and Sonoma. And we crowned a champion, and our champion is? Who's our champion?
What's his name? Newgarden.
Joseph Newgarden. Yes, I put you on the spot. Sorry.
I didn't realize it was going to be a quiz.
Yes, always be prepared. Joseph Newgarden. Newgarden, who has only been in racing a relatively short time, and he came over from the Fuzzies Vodka team, I forget who that is, last year, and he was one of the four for Penske this year. Penske has one of those teams that has four. Imagine if Penske had I want to see Penske in Formula One with a team with two cars out there. He's like the Red Bull Toro Rosso of IndyCar with four cars. But
you do know Penske had a Formula One team.
Oh, man. But how long ago was that? Oh, back in the 70s.
70s and early 80s.
I want him to come back. I just think it would be neat. But yeah, Penske's got Pagenaud and Newgarden and Castroneves and, oh, gosh, who's the – Will Power, right? Yeah.
Yep.
And the four of them are all very good, and they're all very competitive right to the very end. But, of course, ended up Joseph Newgarden. He really turned it on in the second half of the season. He had kind of done okay the first half of the season. But, man, he, in the last several races, he really came on. And when I look at the numbers, it really needed to be him to win because he had one, two, three, four first place finishes and a couple of second, 3 seconds, 4 seconds. He had like four firsts and 4 seconds. Nobody else was that close to that. So to me, it would have been a little bit of an injustice if somebody like Pagenaud with only two wins had won the point standing over somebody with 4 wins and 4 seconds. That just wouldn't have seemed quite right to me. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, he did. He's a good driver. He gets there. I don't know. I just find he's got zero personality as far as I'm concerned. I find him completely forgettable, which is a horrible thing to say about somebody. But
Which one? Newgarden, you mean?
Newgarden, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. All right. I don't know. I'm sure he's a very nice guy.
He's kind of an American Botas.
Yeah, he is. Yeah.
Big blonde headed dude that doesn't have a. Yeah.
That's and right. He can clearly drive a race car better than I can, but I just find him very forgettable. So I can't say I was particularly excited one way or the other about him winning the championship. But good luck to him. You know, I hope he, you know, it's the right thing. There's other people I would have rather seen win it. But like you said, he, you know, he scored the most points at the end of the season, and that's what counts.
Well, he's the first American to win in 5 years, and that's for IndyCar. That's always kind of special. They want an American to win at least every now and then, and and that's cool. And somebody was kind of summed up Newgarden pretty well. They said he's a big, you know, handsome guy. He says all the right things. He seems genuine. He knows to thank his sponsors and everything. He's almost like an android that has been perfectly programmed to be kind of the most courteous, nice, attractive driver. But he doesn't have that quirky interest that pulls you in like a Castro Neves or you know, some of these other guys, Scott Dixon, that are a little quirky, a little off, and they make them likable, you know?
Yeah.
I mean,
I mean, you know, for me, my favorite American, I think with you as well, is Rossi. He's the guy I'd like to see hang up towards the front, but I think he's starting to get there.
He came on the end. Yeah, his last few races, he finished second, sixth, third, sixth, first, and then he didn't do well at Sonoma, but he kind of had to retire. But yeah, 2-6, 3-6, and 1 in five of his last six races, including winning at Watkins Glen. That was only his second win since the Indy 500 last year, so... maybe he's coming around. I mean, he's just got to get a car. It's just like with all these drivers, they need a combination of what they do and the car giving them a chance. And he ended up
I mean, Rossi was third at Pocono, and I thought he was actually in with a good chance of winning that for quite a large proportion of the race. It's I love watching the races there because it's such a wide track. I mean, I think there was one point when they were five or six wide.
Oh, that race is crazy. Down
it's just a crazy circuit. I mean, it's not even an oval. It's like a triangle with, you know.
Yeah.
It has three corners instead of four. And
with three different.
The longest straight. The straight's longer than Indy.
Three different corners. That's what they brag about is they have an Indy corner and then two other tracks. They have three corners from three other tracks sort of glued together with a long straightaway. That's so weird. And they have it actually says on the wall of turn three what turn four.
Yeah.
It actually says that. I'd forgotten. Yeah, that is a weird track. And, of course, drivers being drivers, if you can fit five wide, they're going to try to get six.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
And they would, yeah.
It looks crazy, but I think I'd love to go watch a race there.
So that was Pocono. I want to see. Let's see. Yeah, Pocono, Will Power actually won. I'd forgotten that Will pulled out a win there toward the end of the season. I like Will okay. He's a pretty likable guy. He's pretty funny.
Yep.
Newgarden finished second, and Rossi finished third there. Yeah.
Yeah. But that's about all I remember.
Yeah, at Gateway, and I was at Gateway. We'll talk about that in just a second. At Gateway, Rossi, I think, was pretty much in sixth the entire race. I was watching him, and he might drop back to seventh. I'm like, oh, no. And then he'd pull back up to sixth again. I'm like, hey, here he goes. He'd get up to, like, fifth for a minute. I'm like, oh, here he comes. And he'd drop back to sixth. So he was pretty much in sixth from the beginning to the end of that race. There was just no – he couldn't catch the ones, the five ahead of him, and the other ones couldn't catch him. It was a really strange – let's go ahead and move to Gateway then. Yeah, Gateway, interesting race. It's the first IndyCar race I've ever attended. My whole family went. I'll tell you really quick how it went. And I did get a little recording of some sound. I'll play about 20 seconds of audio from it. But we got there. I had no idea what to expect. We had a parking tag. We had our tickets and everything. There was no sign.
This was a Saturday night race, wasn't it?
Saturday night, yeah. But we got there about 2 o'clock in the afternoon. The autographs were going to start at 3. Little did we know, if you're not in line before 2 o'clock, you weren't going to get any. So it took us half an hour wandering around to even find where we were supposed to be after we got into the track. It's a big facility. We ended up in the wrong line a couple of times. By the time we got in the line to get autographs, we were pretty much at the back. We got about 10 people ahead of us to the drivers to get autographs, and the time ran out, and they all got up and left. So we stood there in the heat for about an hour and a half, 2 hours, and didn't get anything for it. Oh, but they did leave stacks of their autographed color pictures, their little cards, like with their information on it. And the 10 people ahead of us took all of them.
Oh, really? That's ridiculous.
We got nothing. So I was pretty upset about that. But I did get a cool Rossi jersey with Napa on it and his number and everything. That's pretty cool. But the race, we go in there and they're having like the, not the Indy Lights, but the one right below it. They had three races. They had the big race in the dark, but before that they had the Indy Lights. And before that they had like, I don't know what kind of cars these were, but they were louder than the Indy cars. It was the Mazda. It was the Mazda series.
Oh, Star Mazda?
Yeah, the Mazda series. And they looked like little mini Indy cars, but they were so loud. So I think that's what, I don't know. No, I think what I recorded is the, let me go ahead and play it. This is the, like, 25 seconds of the Indy cars. The reason I recorded it is because Gateway is an oval, but it's like a bowl. The sound just stays in it. And one end is slightly bigger around than the other, so it's like a slight triangle of an oval with long straightaways. It's a neat track. And the sound just echoes like in a canyon in that oval, and it gets louder and louder. So what you'll hear is the cars on the other side of the track at first as they're coming around closer and closer to me. So here we go. You ready? Now, that may have been like a parade lap or something, but they were flying. They were still pretty loud and shaking the ground. I remember when I was a kid going to a NASCAR race, the NASCARs actually, they shook the ground. The IndyCars didn't really shake the stadium or anything, the stands, but they were loud.
They were. I love that sound. That's a great sound. I love the sound of the IndyCars coming by on an oval at that sort of speed. It's great. I mean, you're right about NASCAR. I always remember the NASCAR races I've been to that it shakes your internal organs.
Yeah.
Yes. The full NASCAR pack goes by on the first lap and they're all together at speed. You feel it in your whole body.
Yeah.
I just love the sound of the IndyCars on an oval coming by at that sort of speed. It's great. So it really thank you for that. That brought back some good memories.
So that Gateway race, the only thing that was really memorable about the race itself, like I said, I was watching Rossi the whole time. I'm not sure my family really appreciated the race. I don't know if they're going to want to go back. But I really enjoyed it, of course. The only thing that was really memorable about it was near the end, Pagano had the lead. And this is where Newgarden pretty much won the championship. He came up alongside Pagano, dove down to the left of him, scraped wheels with him, and Pagano, kind of in shock, veered off to the right, and Newgarden went by. And after the race, we only saw this later because, of course, when you're there, it's just you see him pass and you don't realize the full ramifications of it or the reactions. But seeing it later in the replay, Pagano was upset. Now, he calmed down by the time of Sonoma and Watkins Glen, but Pagano was pretty hot. So did you catch anything about that, or did you note anything about that?
No, I didn't. I think... My main memory of watching Gateway wasn't that the one where Tony Kanaan spun before the start?
Oh, and Will Power,
early
too.
Early on, somebody climbed over the back of Will Power.
Yeah. It's like there was a spot on the track. It was like the diagonally opposite us. So it was like way over. We could see it very clearly, but it was on the far side of the track from us. Cars kept spinning out. Even before the race even started. Yeah, because that was, it took like 12 or 15 laps before they even actually officially started the race. They ran like the first 10, 12 laps under yellow because they just couldn't start the race. People kept crashing on the parade. It was so weird. That was pretty bizarre. So, it made the race take a lot longer. It was like 1 o'clock in the morning before we finally got home. That was a long, long deal. Yeah, it was ridiculous. And we got out of there pretty quick too. So, but it was a neat experience. I really had a great time, and I'm glad I got to go. So, and the other thing I wanted to mention was it was a huge turnout. I think they were shocked at how many people came because there was some talk about trying to give away tickets or something the last few days. And I thought, oh dear, that's not good. But no, there were people still streaming in right before the race started. Cars lined up to the interstate, and the grandstands were pretty full. And they even remarked about it on the little podium, on the stand thing at the beginning before they, you know, before they started the race, was that they were just so thrilled with how many people were there. So from everything I saw, this was a big success, and I'm sure they're going to be back next year. I'm really looking forward to it.
Yeah, I was actually just looking. That was the first race since 2003. I remember seeing that on the TV and the commentators talking about how packed the grandstands were.
So, yeah, we got up in there very early. We got up in there about 4 o'clock. The race didn't start till like 7 or something. And there was hardly anybody around us then, but by the time the race started, we was pretty elbow to elbow up in there. So yeah, that was really cool. I was just very happy for Gateway because they have like new ownership and they're really trying hard to have, like, they have drag races, they got a go-kart track out there. They're doing a lot of stuff to try to get that thing built up. And it's in a pretty depressed part of Metro St. Louis. Granite City, Madison area up there is like, it's like old Rust Belt, you know, Illinois. It's not new stuff, and so it needs everything it can get. So that's good.
That's good.
Let's see, Watkins Glen. What do you remember of Watkins Glen?
Well, I always enjoy the Indy cars at Watson Glen because they're on a real road track. Another ex-Formula One circuit. So, excuse me. Apologies for the cough. It's a great proper road track. I love seeing the Indy cars on there. There's been some great races there over the years. And as you mentioned earlier, Alexander Rossi won. So,
woohoo!
You know, he's my guy for having watched him win at Indy last year. He's my guy now in IndyCar, so...
I'm glad we agree.
Yeah, and watching him come on this year, certainly, you know, the second half of this year, he certainly seems to be, if you pardon the pun, getting in the groove. So seeing him get his second IndyCar win at on a road course was great.
Yeah, so Alexander Rossi pulls out the win there, and he actually was still alive for the championship. It would have taken like a Lewis Hamilton miracle, but he was still alive. But it really was going to come down at Sonoma to Newgarden, Pagano, Dixon, and Castro Neves, with Will Power kind of on the outside, maybe outside chance. I really thought Castro Neves had a shot, man.
Yeah, I mean, really, that's who I would have liked to have seen win the championship because he never managed it in, what was it, a 30-year career in IndyCar? I would have liked to have seen him bow out with the championship, but wasn't to be.
No. So. He never could quite get out of, like, second or third, it seems like, in most of those races. He only won Iowa, was the only win he had. He finished, you know, around fourth, fifth, third, fourth, seventh in a bunch of races. But have we seen the end of him? I mean, is he going to go off and do something else now, or what do you think?
I think hasn't he been tagged for Penske's new sports car program? So I think he's going to go be the lead driver coach on that. So I wouldn't be surprised if we see him. I would expect to see him back at Indy. I think he is desperate to win his fourth Indy 500.
Yeah, that would be great too.
So I'd like, you know, I think like Montoya and a couple of the others, I think we'll see him back at Indy for a couple more years yet, trying to get his fourth Indy win. But in terms of a full-time season, I think he's probably done.
So any shakeups you see coming for next year? I mean, if Castro Neves is out, I mean, anybody else? Scott Dixon's got to be getting pretty long in the years too, but no, there hadn't been any talk of him bowing out. He was doing really well this year.
Yeah, I mean, I think most of the top I think Canaan's looking around for a ride, I think most of the top guys are going to be there. Again, there's still the Fernando Alonso question. if he doesn't stay at McLaren, is he going to come and do a full season of IndyCar?
I just can't see him doing that, though. You know, I mean, IndyCar just doesn't have the panache, really, that Formula One does.
And the Honda relationship is now gone, because I think if he would have come and done it with Andretti, and they're a Honda team. And
yeah,
that McLaren-Honda relationship obviously is no longer there. So I don't know. I think that's a, you know... probably not going to happen, but it sort of would be nice. But hopefully he'll come back and have another run at the 500 at some point.
Oh, I hope so. But, that would be so great.
Yeah. I mean, just looking at the IndyCar teams, I'm not seeing anything that sort of leaps out at me in terms of major shakeups. I think most people are staying where they are, aren't they?
Michaela Lotion might be out.
Yeah, isn't Sato moving as well? Is Sato staying with Andretti? I can't remember.
I think he's maybe changing to a different team, but
yeah.
And I guess Penske will have to find a new number four, right? Or a new extra guy. They'll keep Newgarden and Pagenaud. Will Power probably is safe, but who else would if you were Penske and you can get the best drivers in IndyCar, who would you go and make your fourth driver?
I'd actually go for Sebastian Bourdais.
Yeah.
I know he's been multiple when it was kart, not Indy. He was 3 times champion. He's been around a long time, but just the way he came back from those injuries that he sustained at the Indy 500, he's still got the fire. He's got the experience. I think if you're looking for somebody with experience, I go for him. If you're looking for somebody young with probably you could groom, maybe Max Chilton.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's got a. The big downside of Max Chilton is, amazingly, he still lives in the UK and commutes to the US for every race.
Oh, wow.
So he
hadn't got a place in South Florida with all the other guys yet?
No, or in Indy.
Indy, right. Yeah, it's one of the two, no, right.
Yeah. And actually, the one guy I'd really like to see in a front-running car is James Hinchcliffe.
He had a relatively... poor season. He's a good driver and he's very personable, got a great personality, but he didn't have a great year. He had a couple of third places, and then he just kind of died out. He had a 20th and a 21st and a 22nd toward the end. That was not great. You know, the driver that I feel like is probably the best fit at Penske, although he is kind of getting a bit old, long in the tooth too, is Ryan Hunter-Reay. He just seems like a Penske guy somehow, like a corporate ready to jump in and be the button down, you know, elder statesman guy like some of those others.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's really embedded in Andretti Autosport, though, so I don't think that's going to happen. That's I think he was with Andretti when he won his championship. So.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yep.
All right. Well, that's the IndyCar championship, and that's Formula One. So we'll be back in a few weeks to kind of catch up on the latest on Formula One and any other news that's going on. Is there any other news out there that we need to know about on the two circuits that I'm missing, I'm not thinking of? We've been a lot of talk of movement going on, but...
No, I think we covered most of the driver stuff for Formula One. I mean, that's really been the thing the last couple of weeks is people signing contracts, Vettel and Raikkonen back at Ferrari. Yeah. It looks like basically Ferrari, Mercedes, and Red Bull are not going to be changed. Yep. And you know, so there's 3 or 4 empty seats. When the music stops, we'll see who ends up where. But I think that's going to be the main thing for the next few things. And who's going to be Red Bull's engine supplier in 2019 seems to be the question of the day.
That's right. As long as it's somebody good, because I want Red Bull competitive. I like them, especially if they're going to keep. Danny, Ricky, and Max. I like those two guys a whole bunch, and I'm kind of rooting for them now. So, all right. Well, Alan.
Okay.
Yes, sir?
Nothing. I was going to say, okay. Yeah, it was a pleasure as always.
Yeah, thanks for coming on as always, and lots of good stuff. And like I say, we'll be back to get us ready for the end of the Formula One season in 3 or 4 weeks. So, we appreciate it as always, and I guess the White Rocket open wheel show, I'm going to get out of here for another episode, and we'll see you guys down the road.
This has been a White Rocket Entertainment production.